I had thought about just sharing with you the testimony of some things that God's doing in my own life, and I'll do a little bit of that, but I want us this morning just to look at what I think is the central issue for those of us who are in the ministry today, and see if we can discover some things or rediscover some things that maybe we knew at one time in our lives. I don't know whether they have 4-H in Texas, Dr. Morris, but I'm an old 4-H man, you know, head, heart. There's some guys down here shaking their head. Head, heart, hands, and health person, you know, and as I grew up, that was a big thing to do in the small community where I grew up. And in that community, we always, and in the 4-H club that we had, we always had to have a project. And as I began to think about a project one year, I decided that I'd have a garden. And I didn't know anything about gardens. I didn't have the foggiest idea what I was supposed to do with a garden. But I got out there and began to try it. And I got so excited when some of those things began to grow. You know, I had a row of cabbage over here, and I had a row of radishes over here, had a row of crabgrass over here, and a row of weeds over here. You know, I had all kinds of things. And then I had a couple of rows of corn. And I was absolutely fascinated by that corn. That stuff began to grow up there, and it began to get as tall as I was, began to get taller than I was. Went out one day and told my dad, I said, let's pull that stuff up and eat it. Well, I really didn't quite have the picture at that point. And so decided that he convinced me that I ought to wait until the ears got on there. And so it began to grow. And the ears began to come out there, you know, these little bitty ears, and they just began to grow. And I became really excited about that, and began to realize that there's really something here. And you know, I finally the day came, you know, when all those shucks were on there, and I wasn't sure what we were supposed to do with the shucks, but you know, they were there covering up the corn. And my dad went over one day, and when the corn was real little, he just kind of peeled a little back, and I could see in there. And see that there was something growing in there. And finally, the day came, the exciting day, when I was able to go out and pull off an ear of that corn and just peel back those shucks. And as I peeled them back, finally got down to the heart of the thing, right down to the fruit of the matter, in getting that corn out of there. And I look back on that experience, and I really think That is a very central thing as far as the Christian faith and the Christian ministry is concerned, because I know in my own life it's very easy for me to lose sight of the heart of the issue, of the center of what we're trying to get to, of the fruit of the whole thing. And I know it's very easy for me in my own life to lose sight of that goal. Now, the goal wasn't to grow the tall corn and pull it up and eat the stalk. And the goal really wasn't to pull back those shucks, but the real goal was to get that corn and be able to eat it. And as we begin to look this morning for just a few minutes at peeling back all those things that have surrounded us in our Baptist life, and all those things that have surrounded us in the ministry, and all those things that bombard us from all around the world in which we live, I want us to see if we can't get back to right at the central issue, right at the heart of what the goal of the Christian life really is. And I think Paul lays it out for us really clearly here. Look over, if you will, with me over in Philippians, the third chapter. And Paul puts it on pretty strong here. Here's what he says, beginning with verse 7. He says, "But all such assets I have written off because of Christ. I would say more. I count everything sheer loss because all is far outweighed by the gain of knowing Christ Jesus my Lord, for whose sake I did in fact lose everything. I count it so much garbage for the sake of gaining Christ and finding myself incorporated in Him with no righteousness of my own, but the righteousness which comes from faith in Christ, given by God in response to faith." And listen to verse 10, because we're going to come back here. He says, "All I care for is to know Christ, to experience the power of His resurrection, and to share His suffering in growing conformity with His death, if only I may finally arrive at the resurrection from the dead. It is not to be thought that I have already achieved all this. I have not yet reached perfection, but I press on, hoping to take hold of that for which Christ once took hold of me. My friends, I do not reckon myself to have got hold of it yet. All I can say is this, forgetting what is behind me and reaching out for that which lies ahead, I press towards the goal to win the prize, which is God's call in the life above in Christ Jesus. And Paul there very simply lays out his whole purpose for life. Everything is summed up right there in that passage. And especially as we begin to look at verse 10, we begin to see that that is true. That the Paul that Paul has laid out here for us, the very goal of his life. And what is it? What is it? He says to know him and the power of his resurrection and the fellowship of his suffering and be conformed to the image of his Son. Now let's just look at this for a few minutes. It says to know him. What does it mean to know him? Well, to know very simply means to have an intimate knowledge of, to have an acquaintance of, to really be intimately involved in some type of information or some type of relationship, to be intimate in that relationship and to have to be highly informed about that situation. And who does Paul say that we need to know? He says that we need to know Jesus. To know him. To know him. And the exciting thing to me is that it was God's purpose before I was ever even born, and God's purpose for me now, and God's purpose for the future of my life, that I was to know him. All of it's brought together very simply in that. Let me just illustrate this for you. I've done this with some kids in Texas before, but let me just share this with you. I'm married a gal. I haven't always been married, but I've been married for a while. I walked into a library one night at the school where I was attending and looked over there to my left, and I saw the most beautiful girl I'd ever seen. And I said, I need to meet that girl. And so I didn't just walk up to her, but I went around behind the stacks there in the library, and when I got back in there, you know, you got those books in there and you can kind of peel them out a little bit, and I kind of pulled them away so I could... So I could kind of stare back there through there and see what she really looked like. And when I looked at her, I began to realize that I really did want to meet her. And there was only one problem with that, and that was she was with another guy. And so I didn't let that deter me too much. I knew this guy, and so I figured if I went over and just began to talk to him, that he'd, just out of sheer politeness, he'd have to introduce me, you know. And so I went over there and began to talk to him, and finally he came around to the place where he introduced me, and this girl named Carol Price and I began to talk. And we just kept on talking. For all I know, that guy's still sitting there in the library. We just went on talking. And the next night I asked her out. We went to the library for a study date, spent about 5 minutes studying, and then left, and went out. And we began to talk some more. Began to find out all kinds of things about this gal. I began to find out, well, I knew right off she was beautiful. I could tell that. And I began to realize that she had a really fantastic personality. I began to realize that she came from a really neat Christian home. I began to realize that she was a very intelligent girl who was obviously making some good grades there at the seminary. And the thing I began to realize was that I was getting to know her. Well, I began to get to know her a little bit at that point, and then our relationship continued. And one night I kissed her, and then we, a few weeks later, we got engaged, and then we got married, and here we are, one 3-year-old son and 1 3-month-old daughter later, And we've been married for 5.5 years, and I look back on that 5.5 years, and I begin to realize that I know a lot more things about her now than I did that first night I took her out on a study date. It's a good thing, isn't it, men? But I begin to realize a lot of things about that. You know, I begin to realize a lot of things about her. I begin to know that she's not only those things I mentioned earlier that are kind of superficial, but I begin to realize that she really doesn't like it when I leave my clothes laying around in the house. And she doesn't like it when I don't, when I don't take out the garbage when I'm supposed to. Well, I never knew that back then, you know. And not only that, I begin to realize, too, that she has a tremendous ability that I could have never seen before. a tremendous ability to discern other people's character. She has an innate ability to be a tremendous, fantastic mother. I mean, it just comes really natural to her. And so I began to learn all these different things about her that I could never have known if over the last 5.5 years I hadn't spent more time with her than any other individual in the world. And the point I simply want to make here in sharing that illustration with you is that the whole point of the Christian life is that somewhere back there we got to know Him. When we were 8 or 10 or 12 or 15 or 20 or whatever, and we began a relationship with Him that He intended for us to continue. And if we only know, and if the people in our churches only know as much now as they did back then we've really missed the whole point of that beautiful, beautiful relationship to Jesus Christ. Because the whole point, Paul says, is not only to know Him once, but to keep on knowing Him and to get to know Him more and more and more. And I found in the ministry myself that this is very difficult. I found that ministers have a harder time with this than most lay people. Because we get so caught up in mission strategies and evangelism strategies and cooperative programs and stewardship programs. And we get so caught up in building a big church and being a great preacher and being a great preacher's wife. And finally, we come to the place where we realize that all we've got in our hands is a great big hunk of shucks. Isn't that right? When the whole point of the thing, the whole point of Jesus breaking into history was very simply that we might know Him. Know Him. I've discovered something in my own life. That my life is my ministry. My life is my ministry, and I can create all kinds of programs around me, but virtually, In the ultimate realm of things, they're going to be totally ineffective unless my life is transparent before God and transparent before my fellow man and transparent before fellow Christians, transparent before a lost world, and just opening my life up and saying, God, here it is. You flow through it and do with it exactly what you want to. And that comes from knowing Him. From knowing Him. Jesus has one goal for our life, and that is to know Him. Are you spending time every day just getting to know Him? Have you set that as one of the real priorities of your life, to get to know Him? You know, I could have brought my wife out here and told you what a great wife she is. I could go around the country leading marriage seminars on how great marriage is. But boy, that's nothing. That's nothing compared with being with her and getting to know her and actually, in reality, having that marriage relationship that's so beautiful. And I really believe that we can go around telling people about God, and we can go around showing people about God, and we can go around talking about God till we really miss the whole point. And the point is, if we're not getting to know Him, it doesn't do any good to talk about Him. And so I really ask you this morning, do you know Him? Are you getting to know Him day by day in your own life as a minister, as a minister's wife, as a college student? But not, Paul doesn't just stop there. He says not only to know Him, but to know Him and the power of the resurrection. The power of the resurrection. And this word power is very simply the word dunamis or dynamite. I grew up in West Virginia, and we lived on a dirt road for a long time, and I remember the excitement one day when we found out that they were going to pave our road. And they began to pave it, but they ran into some problems because right in front of our house there was a huge boulder. And they came in the house and told us that they were going to have to blast, and we thought, well, that'll be all right. But we didn't know. We didn't know what was going to happen, because when that thing went off, we just, as much as we were anticipating it, we just weren't expecting what was going to happen. I mean, it just literally shook that whole neighborhood. And that's the kind of thing that Paul is talking about here when he's talking about power. But he not only just talks about power in general, he talks about the power of the resurrection. Now, what is the power of the resurrection? The power of the resurrection is the power that raised Jesus Christ from the dead. Now, Jim Irwin's going to be on this program, or he already has been, and And I think he would agree with me that those Apollo flights really look kind of Mickey Mouse compared to the resurrection of Jesus Christ and his resurrection power. And not only is it resurrection power, that the power that raised Jesus Christ from the dead, but that same power that raised Jesus Christ from the dead is available to me and to you and to the church today. And at the empty tomb, God transferred that power over to us and gave it to us to be used by us. Where is spiritual power in the world today? Is it taking place? You could probably give some tremendous illustrations of spiritual power in your church and your life. I have a pastor friend who shared with me several months ago about his little daughter. They discovered his daughter had leukemia. She had 3 days to live. Her spine was nothing but just kind of a foamy substance. And he got a word from the Lord that his daughter wasn't going to die. And his wife got the same word. And through the resurrection power of Christ, that girl was healed. And she's alive today. As far as I know, at last report, out from under the doctor's orders. I know a pastor in North Carolina who happens to be my father-in-law, who was an overworked, underpaid pastor. He was a nervous pastor. He was a fearful pastor. He was a man who was under the pressure of his job. And God took his life and brought him to the depths and brought him out of that experience with God's resurrection power. And let me tell you something, around his community, he's wielding tremendous spiritual power in the lives of people through prayer. Just in one area. And God's using his life. Spiritual power. The life of my dad, I get excited about this every time I think about it. My dad is a man who is an American, he's the American dream man here in the bicentennial year. He grew up as a very poor man and brought himself up by his bootstraps from rags to riches. And in doing so, he acquired a spirit about him that said, I am sufficient within myself. Now, he was a Baptist deacon and went to church and was probably doing pretty much what he knew. But then, about 3 years ago, some things began to happen in our family. I don't know how it is in your family, but when one person's involved in some difficulty in our family, everybody's involved, and some things began to happen to my dad. And he began to run up against some situations in our family that he just couldn't handle, that he just didn't have any control over, that he just wasn't sufficient for. And God brought him low and raised him up and gave him spiritual power in his life and transformed his life. And my dad shares his faith with people who come into his office. He never did that before. My dad has always been a kind of a giving man, but he's become so generous. And boy, the beautiful relationship that's happened in our family, I mean, it's absolutely fantastic. When I go home, he comes down into the basement, or he'll come down to the basement of my home when he's at my home, and he'll say, son, let's pray together. Let's pray. That never happened when I was growing up as a kid. God's spiritual power, his resurrection power working in the lives of people. You could give illustration after illustration of that. But just very simply, let us say it is available today to us who are in the church. And when does God make it available? When does he make it available? He makes it available to us when we need it, for one thing. He makes it available when we need it. And when we come and ask him in faith. I've discovered an interesting principle here. And I want you to catch this because I think it has tremendous significance. The principle is this, that the amount of spiritual power that you have in your life and in your ministry is in direct proportion to the brokenness of your attitude and the confessing attitude that you have. Let me say that one more time. The amount of spiritual power that you have in your life is in direct proportion to the attitude of brokenness that you have in your life and that I have in my life. But not only does God give it to us when he needs it, but have you ever really felt like you needed it and God didn't give it? Well, I've discovered something else about the resurrection power of Jesus, and that is very simply this. That a lot of times God hadn't given it to me because I wasn't mature enough to handle it. And if He gave it to me, I'd really make a mess out of it. And so maybe as we get to know Him better and better day by day, we'll come to the place where we're mature enough for God to use to give His resurrection power to us and through us and make it available to us on a daily type of basis. That's the goal of my life. That's the goal of my life. And I hope that's the goal of your life. Is God's resurrection power working in your ministry? Are you always having to pump the program? Pump it up, pump it up, pump it up, pump it up. Because when we have to pump it up and pump it up, what we're really saying is that my life isn't sufficient. My life doesn't have enough resurrection power in it for somebody to look at it and say, there's where Jesus Christ lives. Is there resurrection power flowing through your life day by day? I desire that for my life. I desire that for your life. But Paul goes on to say one other thing here. He says, and the fellowship of His suffering. And the fellowship of His suffering. Not only does he talk about knowing Him and the power of the resurrection, but he talks about the fellowship of His suffering. And what he means here is very simply that you and I as Christians are to be identified with the cross of Jesus Christ, and not identified just to say that we wear it around our neck or something like that, but to be identified in the sense that we say we bear on our bodies the mark of Jesus Christ. That we're like Paul in Galatians 2:20, I have been crucified with Christ, nevertheless I live, yet not I, but Christ lives in me. And the life I now live, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave Himself for me. Watchman Nee says that the equipment for every Christian worker, one of the pieces of equipment is that we will have a willingness to suffer. A willingness to suffer. And I don't know how that is for you, but I promise you that in my own life that's been extremely painful. And I've shared this experience with some of the fellows here, but I'd like to share it with you. A couple of years ago, I found myself in my life and my ministry frustrated, angry, having some real lonely moments, pressure just building up tremendously. And I didn't know what the problem was. I mean, I kind of knew, but I didn't really want to, you know, face it. I don't know whether you've ever been like that or not, but you know things are back there somewhere, but you just don't really want to verbalize them because you're afraid you'd really have to focus in on them and deal with them. And that's kind of where I was. And I went to a conference something like this. And one of the speakers began to speak directly to me about some things in my life. And I began to tell God, okay, God, 100%. I was in charge of this conference, by the way. I said, I'll take care of this thing when I get home. I'll give you 100%, but it's got to be when I get home. And I began to realize that that wasn't going to work. And so the next evening, my wife and I slipped out of the meeting after it was over and went up to our room. And we began to talk and to pray and confess some things to one another. And I began to share, to confess before God and before her several areas of my life that really needed to be straightened out, that finally God had helped me to focus in on. But one particular area, I said, honey, I've never had the courage to even tell God this, and I don't know how in the world I'm going to tell you this. But I said, and this just blows my pride just to smithereens to tell you this. But I said, listen, when I was in college, I cheated on some tests. And I've never been able to face that before. And I think the reason I've never been able to face it is because I know what it means. That means I'm going to have to go and get it straightened out. And so I shared that with her. And there was a tremendous sense of cleanness in that. And then there were some friends of ours who were there, and we had a time of sharing. And I just stood up in front of them with just all the courage I could muster, and I said, listen, I don't care really what you think about me, but let me just tell you something because I need your support. I said, I cheated on some tests in college, and I need to go back and make that right. And I want to claim victory over that right now and seek your power, your support in this. They gave it to me. A lot of people say that may be hanging out your wash, but I think it's more like James 5:16, where he says, confess your sins and you will be healed, and to one another and you will be healed. And so I went back home. And the first opportunity, I walked into my office and dialed the telephone number of that professor. And let me tell you something, I was scared to death. I was literally scared to death. I was shaking and sweating, and I was just as nervous as I've ever been. And I picked up that telephone, and with a quivering voice, I said, Doc, I said, I've done some things wrong in your class. I said, I've wronged you. I cheated on some tests when I was your class, and I want to just ask you to forgive me. And he said yes, and I hung up that phone, and I literally, you just floated out of that room. Because I'd gone through the pain, God had brought me to the victory. Because I'd gone through the valley, God had brought me to the mountain. And I was free from that. I'm free to share it with you. I'm free to share it with anybody who wants to know about it because God has set me free from that. Why? Before I couldn't even tell anybody about it. Now I can share it with you. If as a Christian, if I had never, I would never have had to face up to that if I hadn't been a Christian. But because I was a Christian and bear on my body and in my life the mark of Jesus Christ on the cross, then I had to go through that painful experience so God could bring me to the place where there would be power and victory in my own life. I wonder about you, if you've faced up to some of the painful experiences of your life that God really wants to bring victory in, if you'll just be willing to face the pain of that situation. He desires it. He desires it. And then Paul really concludes it here with a beautiful statement. He says, therefore, to know Him, the power of His resurrection, the fellowship of His suffering, he says, therefore, to be conformed to the image of Christ. Now this is beautiful. This is absolutely beautiful because what he means is that we are actually becoming more and more as Christians like Jesus Christ every day. That we ought to be getting more and more like the character of Jesus in our own lives. Romans 8:29 says that God determined before the beginning of the world that all those who came to Him might be like His Son. Like His Son. And so when we're knowing Him and when we're in the power of the resurrection and the fellowship of His suffering, then we're going to be more and more like the character of Jesus Christ in our lives. And people will be able to see that more and more and more. I don't know where you are in all this, but I'm kind of like Paul. I haven't gotten there yet. I'm not even anywhere close. But I see that as the goal out there. And that's what Jesus is really pointing me to. With Him living in my life, to point me out there to the place where I'm becoming more and more like Him. And it's really a lot like a sculptor who just has a piece of marble right before him, and he takes that square piece of marble and he just begins to hammer and chisel away at it. He has a vision in his mind. He has a plan in his mind that he's going to make a tiger out of that thing, and he begins to hammer and chisel away till finally that thing becomes a tiger like he designed for it to be. And God in our lives really designs, He's got a plan, a unique plan for us, even in the ministry. And His plan is that He would carve out of the marble of our lives and make us like Jesus Christ. Let me just conclude this way. Who started your life? Jesus did. And who keeps it going? Jesus does. Who started your rebirth? Who started your second life? Jesus did. And who keeps it going? Jesus does. Well, then it stands to reason that if those two things are true, then who started your ministry? Jesus did. And who's going to keep it going? Jesus will. But the only way He can do that is when we get to know Him. Let me conclude with this illustration. Ralph Herring, who is relative on my wife's side of the family who's an eminent pastor at the First Baptist Church in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, tells a story about a younger minister who came to an older minister, and when he came to him, he said, "Sir, I really desire to know how you've come to know God in your life." And the older man said, "I've come to know God in a lot of experiences, but there was one point in my life where I began to know Him deeply." He said, "Would you like to go to the place where I began to know Him more deeply?" And the young man said, "Boy, I really would. I'd really like to go where I could get to know God more deeply and see the place where you met Him more deeply." And so they got in the car and began to drive down the highway, and the young minister kept thinking, "Now there's a nice place over there. We could, that looks like a place where a man would meet God." And the old man didn't stop there. The older minister didn't stop there. They went on down the road and looked at several other places that looked like places where a man might meet God, but no. The man didn't stop there. And they finally got to the place where they parked the car, and the young man said, "Is this the place?" He said, "No, where it's on farther." And they began to go on farther and went out into the woods, and they got to a beautiful clearing that looked like just exactly like the place where a person would meet God. And the young man said, "Is this the place?" The old man said, "No, it's on farther." And they went two or three other places like that. And finally they came to a place, and a beautiful place. And the younger man said to him, "Is this the place where you can meet God, where you met God?" And the young older man said to him, no, this is not the place. It's on farther." And the younger man said to him, "No, stop. I don't want to go any farther. This is the place where I want to meet God." And the older man said to him very wisely, he said, "This is the place. This is the place." And I would say that during this evangelism conference for you and for me, this is the place where we could meet God more deeply and get to know Him more intimately and begin to stake down some things about our lives and begin to say, "This is where I'm going to begin my journey to get to know Christ better. No matter what it costs me in my terms of time or my ministry or whatever, I'm going to get to know Christ in a way that He can shine through my life." I really honestly believe, ladies and gentlemen, that God is not looking for natural leaders in the church, but God is looking for supernatural men. Supernatural men who will know Him and know the power of His resurrection and know the fellowship of His suffering and be conformed to the image of His Son, Jesus. And then God will begin to do all the things that He's ever desired to do in the church. Evangelism will follow quite naturally from that, because you and I, as supernatural men, will be walking so close to Jesus Christ that He will demonstrate through us who He is to a world that's dying to know Him like we know Him.